welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 25th day of December 2019. It's Christmas. Merry Christmas. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host, and this is a special edition, sort of best of at the end of the year. We'll be back to wrap up the year and do the year in review and the decade in review, all that stuff. Don't worry, by the 31st or something. Sometime, I'll be back. Don't worry. But I'll be back every day in case something massive happens. But I'm just going to do intros of the best of interviews that we've done. And this one is no different. This one is very appropriate for today because it involves Christmas and it involves drinking. And if you might want to drink when you're around all that family at Christmas. So we talked to last year, we talked to Michael Foley, author of the book Drinking with St. Nick, Christmas Cocktails for Sinners and Saints. And we learned a couple of drink recipes. His book is full of drink recipes. Do not email me saying, hey, can I enter to win a signed copy? This is a year ago. So no, you can't. But you should definitely pick up the book because it's great. And the drink recipes are really, I still make the Turtle Dove Martini. I still do to this day. I'll probably be drinking one by the time you listen to this, even if you listen to this in the morning. But yeah, it's so damn good. So you learn a lot. We have a lot of fun. We learn a lot of history about alcohol and drinks and all this stuff. It was a great conversation with Michael Foley. But first, we got to pay the bills and tip our hat to our sponsor. Joining me on the phone right now is the webmaster of GetTheTea.com, the head honcho of Life Change Tea, Ronnie McMullen. Welcome to the program, Ronnie.
How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing great, and it's in no small part thanks to your product. Tell me and tell everybody the benefits that they're missing out on by not choosing to use your product.
Life Change Tea is like a digestive aid. Now, people might think, oh, my digestion's great, but usually that's not a truth. All disease, according to Socrates, started in the gut. So when you have a digestive healthy tract, intestinal tract that's doing very well, then you start doing very well. People don't even know that in the cold and flu season, which is we're approaching that quickly, that when you have a cold or flu, your digestion slows way down and it actually can start making you constipated. So with that, Get the Tea, our super strength tea, does a wonderful job in helping things move a little better. In fact, we have the tagline, the tea that makes you go. And there's two facets to that. One, obviously, it will help you with bathroom visits. But the other thing is it will actually give you energy. So it makes you go with giving you lots of energy. And the tea tastes really great. So it's really important to do this on an ongoing basis, not just, you know, one time, you know, get a car wash and we're good to go, but all the time. So it's, I take it every day, have for years and years, and thank God for that.
I think people need to realize, Ronnie, that health is not just about what you put into your body, but making sure your body has the ability to absorb the good things out of that. And that's where Life Change Tea comes in. It helps with all of that. The website is getthetea.com. The man is Ronnie McMullen. Ronnie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And don't forget to enter the promo code Derek in the coupon code at checkout, and you get 10% off your whole order. You can't beat that deal. Promo code Derek, 10% off. And now our interview from last November with Michael Foley, author of the book Drinking with the Saints, Christmas Cocktails for Sinners and Saints. And do yourself a favor, try the Turtle Dove Martini. Merry Christmas. We'll be seeing you tomorrow. Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Caller Podcast, the Friday video edition. I'm your host, Derek Hunter, and as we do every Friday, we bring somebody into our world to make your world a little bit better, and this week's guest is Trumpy Bear. No, I'm just kidding, but we really did drop like 60 bucks on Trumpy Bear as a joke for the program, so I have to show him at least once every show. I'm not even going to pull the full flag out. The whole thing is real. I thought it was a joke. Anyway, thanks for buying that rich $60 well spent. Our real guest today, look, Christmas is coming, the holiday season is coming, and that not only means family, that means you've got to drink because you're going to be around family. Nobody blames you. Nobody holds it against you. So I thought, let's do a show that combines Christmas and alcohol. And who better to do that with than my guest? He's author of the first book, or second book, Drinking with the Saints, A Sinner's Guide to Holy Happy Hour. And now the new, brand new Drinking with St. Nick,
Christmas cocktails for sinners and saints, and Lord knows we all fall into one of those categories. It's Michael Foley. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So how do you get the gig writing about alcohol? Because the research has to be just a lot of fun, and I'm looking for a second book idea, and if I can find a way to get alcohol involved, I'm all down with it.
Let me tell you, there's no better research project than researching alcohol.
Does your accountant look at you when you're writing off things on your taxes and a fifth of this and a fifth of that? What is going on here?
The first time I told my wife, Alexandra, about the book idea, her very first reaction was, great, now all our booze is tax deductible.
Exactly. That's the perfect thing. So first of all, drinking with the saints.
Yes.
You're a Catholic, if I'm not mistaken.
I am
a Catholic as well. Alcohol is an important part of not only the service, but daily life, at least for my grandfather when he was alive. How did you – is there a strong tie between alcohol and Catholicism or religion in general?
Both, really, but especially Catholicism. There is a long history between the development of alcohol and the Catholic Church. A lot of it had to do with health reasons.
Right. Nobody really – water was poisonous.
Exactly. So you added a little alcohol. It killed waterborne pathogens. It saved you from cholera and yellow fever and all these sorts of things. But you also put your finger on another reason why the Catholic Church promoted at least one form of alcohol, wine. It's at the center of the Mass. And so when missionaries came to the New World, they had to bring with them a knowledge of viniculture and wheat bread making in order to continue to celebrate the Mass.
And it helps spread the word.
Spread the word,
somebody
exactly.
Never heard of it before. But if you drink this stuff, it's good, and then you're open to more of it. what would you say is it red wine that is the most identified alcohol, spirit, or anything with religion?
I suppose so, though it doesn't need to be red. White wine was often used as sacramental wine as well. But chartreuse was invented by Carthusian monks, still being made today. They say that whiskey, the very first time that whiskey is mentioned, is by Irish monks, and it's prescribed as a cure for paralysis of the tongue.
That just means you can get drunk and babble, I think.
Pretty much,
which,
yeah.
Which, if you've ever been to Ireland, they do that a lot.
Apparently it works,
yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the monks and the history of it. A lot of what we know today as alcohol in various forms exists because of the church and various religions developing it and over time perfecting it.
Medieval monks, for example, perfected the brewing process as we know it today. Beer is not a Christian invention. I think it was the ancient Babylonians that invented it. But a lot of the fermentation techniques that we use were actually perfected in the medieval cloister. And to this day, the finest beer in the world is made by the Trappists.
See, that's kind of weird, because most people think religious, uptight, not that they're having keggers in the monasteries
right.
Every weekend, but what the church has been very accepting of this tradition throughout
right.
100 years. Why do you think that is?
I think in part because the church recognizes there is nothing intrinsically evil about alcohol. The Bible says wine gladdens the heart of man. The Bible condemns drunkenness, but drunkenness is drinking to excess.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with drinking in moderation, and that's why you have drinking at the wedding of Cana, the Last Supper, the Passover meal. It's a normal part of a healthy life.
Later on in the show, we're going to actually make a couple of drinks recipes from drinking with Saint Nick. Some of the recipes, just the ones that we've been going over, are pretty elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever wonder how they come up with these things?
Lots and lots of practice.
I know, trial and error.
Exactly.
It's just, what would you say is the most complex drink that you've written about in any of your books? That it'll take you a while to make it, but like a really fine meal that you spend a couple of hours in the
right.
kitchen, it's worth it.
December 8th. Is the feast of the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and we have a cocktail called a White Lady. You have to beat egg white for about 5 minutes before you even put it into the cocktail shaker. At first, I actually try not to have too many high-maintenance recipes
right.
in the book. I don't want anything too esoteric,
right.
but this one was recommended to me by a friend, and I thought, I'll give it a shot. Oh my gosh, is it worth the effort?
What all goes in it?
It's an ounce of vodka, an ounce of gin, an ounce of Cointreau, simple syrup and lemon juice, and then the egg white and powdered sugar. It's a strong drink, but it's perfectly well balanced, and it is phenomenal.
And the recipes?
It's in there. The book. Oh, absolutely.
Excellent. The Christmas alcohol has always been a part of family gatherings. People just drink, not to excess necessarily, although depending on your family, who are we to judge? But it's been part of it. Eggnog, the punch, the holiday meal with wine. What is your drink? I mean, you're the expert. You've written two books on it. What would you say this Christmas you're going to be having a nice cocktail at the end of the day, maybe a roaring fire, or the channel that just shows a roaring fire on the television? You're sitting there around with the family. Everything's done. What do you kick back with?
My go-to is a martini. I love martinis.
Just a traditional?
Traditional martini.
Vodka or gin?
I usually go with gin, but I'm not one of those people who thinks of a vodka martini as heretical.
I'm a vodka martini guy.
Excellent. But we could drink together.
There are people who cringe when vodka is not a martini.
I've met some real purists that get very uptight about this, but you know, I try to be open-minded.
Why is there that? Because you know all about these spirits, so I'm going to give all the Kennedys listening all the answers to the questions that they want. Why is there that debate? Is it from Prohibition when it was bathtub gin and they had to mix it with something or what?
Gin was the original ingredient used for a martini from the turn of the century into the 1950s. But then in the 50s, vodka became extremely popular
at the height of the Cold War.
Yeah, exactly.
So these Russians, but they do make some good spirits.
Exactly. I don't know how that came about, but that's why when James Bond orders a martini, it's a vodka martini, because when Ian Fleming was writing these novels in the 50s, vodka was all the rage. But purists think of it as just sort of a newcomer that doesn't really belong there.
When you're writing a book about Christmas drinks and drinking with Santa Claus, for saints and sinners, for both sides, what do you say? Would you say is the most traditional Christmas drink for a family gathering or gathering of friends that 90% of the parties will have?
The wassail, which is basically a fancy term for the Christmas punch. This is a tradition that goes back hundreds of years, and it's great for groups. Like when you're mixing martinis or cocktails for a large number of people, it can be tiresome, but a punch is something that's available for a group. It's easy to do.
It's usually not that strong, so it's not going to have people wincing.
Exactly, exactly. Also, mulled wine for the same reason. Mulled wine is hot wine, and when you heat it, a lot of the alcohol evaporates, so it's even good for kids.
I didn't say that. Just saying over there. We've got an underage intern over there who's now going, hey, wait a second. We could heat some of this stuff up and I can have it. What would you recommend, like, easy? If you're having 20 people over Christmas Eve or even New Year's Eve, it all counts. Something that you can make that everybody's going to like. Is it the mulled wine? Is it the punch? Or is it? Are there things that you can make a bunch of? We're going to make things with shakers in a bit. We're going to do a lot of multi-ingredient things that you could make sort of a bowl of. Is there something that you'd say, you know what? I know you like pouring a little something into the eggnog and putting a spoon in there and calling it punch. Try this. You can make a bowl of it as well, and it'll be it's so much better than anything you've had before.
Yes, there is a mulled wine, or as the Germans called it, a Glühwein, that is a really fun party favorite because it involves taking a sort of little mountain of sugar and soaking it in brandy and setting it on fire. And then the melted sugar drips into the punch bowl. And it has this really cool visual effect. It's usually like a blue flame as well. Hmm. And so, yeah, I recommend that.
We should have done that. That sounds well. What we're gonna do a bunch. It involves the one we're gonna do involves setting toasted rosemary on fire.
That's right.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. But people listening and watching hear sort of these multi-ingredient things and setting rosemary on fire and things like that, and they think, well, that's too complex. We're going to demonstrate how it's easily done. But what do you think that most people drink either straight whiskey or a vodka and soda or a gin and tonic? Are we not experimental enough? Are we just too lazy as a society to not really go into busting out the recipe book? We'll do it for a roast and putting everything together. But when it comes to alcohol, when it comes to drinks, we're so basic for the most part. Why do you think that is?
That's true.
Because there's so much flavorful stuff out there that we'd order at a bar because we don't have to make it.
Right.
But we'd never consider making it at home.
I would definitely say don't be afraid of mixing your own cocktails because it is so easy. And I also think it's more affordable that way.
Yes.
Because if you are drinking straight whiskey, you're going to tend to only buy the good stuff. And that's obviously more expensive. But the great thing about a cocktail is that it came into its own during Prohibition as a way of masking the inferiority of the various ingredients.
Here's paint thinner, but we put juice in it, so it's delicious now.
Well, seriously, and that's how it succeeded. So I like the cocktail because you can actually use sort of middle shelf ingredients, mix them together in such a way that you can't tell. Mm-hmm. It's still fantastic. I would never use a top shelf whiskey for a cocktail, but a mid shelf one, absolutely.
The last, I would say, 10 years have sort of become a renaissance for alcohol, for spirits.
Right.
Before that, all the rage was craft beers and small microbreweries. And if you put $5 into a microbrewery, you were a millionaire in a week.
Yeah.
That's sort of waning. Why have spirits come back in such a way?
Microbrew is still pretty big, although now they have this huge debate about what is a microbrew, because a lot of these former independently owned companies are
making a fortune. They're bought by Budweiser and things.
Exactly. So there's a big controversy in the beer world about that. But you're right. The cocktail is experiencing another golden age. It had it during Prohibition. It had it again during sort of the Rat Pack era of the 50s and 60s.
But there are mixologists who are known and travel the country to come and bring some concoction that they came up with.
Yeah.
That's a relatively new phenomenon.
Well, and that's kind of my worry, that with this competition over cocktails, my worry is that they're going to try and get more and more esoteric and more and more complicated so that it loses touch with the average home bartender.
Right.
So hopefully it won't go that far. We actually have tried to avoid anything too fancy. The smoking rosemary, which we'll make in a moment, is on the upper end of sophisticated or complicated, if you will, but it doesn't get much worse than that.
One of the ingredients that we bought was rye, which is, I believe it's very old.
Yes.
But it's also new. Growing up, I didn't know rye was bread to me.
That's right.
And now suddenly it's everywhere. What is rye and why did it make such a comeback?
You know, I may get criticized for this, but the easiest way to understand it is that it's a drier kind of bourbon. And bourbon and rye were unique American inventions.
Mm-hmm.
So you're drinking history when you drink rye and bourbon.
But what brought it back? Because it's that weird cyclical thing that things go out of style and then suddenly it's literally all the rage right now.
That's right. And Prohibition practically killed rye. It was a very popular American drink prior to Prohibition. And when Prohibition was over, a lot of these forms of alcohol rebounded very quickly, but not rye. I mean, it was practically left dead on the floor. But yeah, for some reason, it's come back recently.
I imagine you've done research on hundreds, if not thousands, of different drinks, not all at once, but over the course of a couple of days. And what in your mind now, because whiskey is very popular, what is the most underappreciated just straight liquor?
Oh.
That people, you know, because 20 years ago, rye, again, if you said rye,
right,
nobody'd know what you're talking about. Now it's a main ingredient in everything.
Right.
Is there something that's sort of going away? I remember as a kid going into bars when I was 21. There used to be rows of schnapps. Remember
right.
schnapps? Now you don't get schnapps anymore. Now it's all flavored liquor. And if you can find, when I was an underage drinker, there, I said it, you got a hold of a bottle of peach schnapps and your friends sat around and took drinks out of it. And it was god-awful terrible, but it was peach schnapps and it was alcohol. Now I don't know that you can find schnapps anywhere.
That's a good point. I don't know if that's a bad thing.
I don't know it's a bad thing either. It's basically sugar water with some alcohol in it and some flavoring. But it used to be a staple, and it's gone, and it's sort of indicative
yeah.
of now. Like, what do you think of these vodkas? You can get every flavor of vodka under the sun and every flavor of everything. Now they're flavoring whiskey with things. It's
yeah.
just seems unnatural.
I think there needs to be a limit to that. The one exception I make is a vanilla-flavored vodka. We'll actually be using that for a cocktail later on.
But vanilla vodka and soda water tastes just like a cream soda, and you get really drunk really fast off that because you don't feel like you're tasting alcohol. Anyway, sorry. I'm not speaking from experience.
I've seen watermelon vodka. I've seen wedding cake vodka.
I've seen bacon vodka. That ain't right. Two great tastes that don't taste great together.
That's right.
But is there any – I mean, are we to the point that we're to saturation that now we're just adding chemical flavors to our liquor, or – is there something coming out? I want to know sort of what you think the future is, because you're the expert here, and I want to know if we're missing something or something's on the horizon. What's next?
I actually think we're having a back to the basics movement when it comes to liquor. So, for example, I'm living in Waco, Texas. Balcones Distilling didn't exist 12 years ago. Now it's world famous because it's making really good whiskey, but a lot of it is sort of the best of the old and the best of the new. They're making corn whiskey, which hasn't been made in 100 years, but was very popular in the 19th century, but with a sort of modern spin. They're making Texas whiskey, which doesn't really exist as a genre, but they're still doing it. And that's just Balcones. This is happening across the country. We're seeing basically the same kind of inventiveness and entrepreneurial spirit that we saw with microbrew 20 years ago. We're now seeing that in the world of spirits.
Is the American public open to new when it comes to their drinking?
Or is it a
niche sort of market of people who will try anything?
I don't know about the average American, but I do know that these companies are doing very well, that there is a market for it somewhere.
Some of these industries, some of these bottles of liquor, you're 12 years old. So if you're going to start a business, you've got to wait. Like, hey, invest a bunch of money with me, and then in 12 years, we'll see whether or not it's a success. Yeah. It's an awful, awful risk, but they're sprouting up all over the country and around the world. What would you say is the quintessential, I think I know the answer, but the quintessential American spirit? Even you can say vodka because we're making it now, and it used to be Russia made the good stuff, or
right.
Sweden made the good stuff.
Right.
Now the good stuff is even whiskey. Oh, it's Tennessee or it's nothing.
Yeah.
But now everybody in the world is making it, and it's all pretty good. It's like cars. Every car is good. Every country is good at making liquor.
Exactly. No, it's true. And we've got Tito's vodka made in Texas, which is really, really good, well-priced as well. All kinds of whiskey is coming out. But you asked about
the quintessential American alcohol spirit.
Well, bourbon and rye, I already mentioned. I'll mention one other, Applejack.
What is Applejack?
Applejack, which I thought it was a cereal growing up. That's how it was introduced to me. Applejack, it's called Applejack because it's literally jacked up apple brandy. It's a fortified apple brandy, and it was a colonial favorite. George Washington actually manufactured his own Applejack. And it, too, is making a comeback.
That sounds interesting. All right. My guest is Michael Foley. His book, Drinking with St. Nick, Christmas Cocktails for Sinners and Saints. We're going to do a jump cut here, so it'll be just really quick. And we'll be back to make real drinks. Since we're not on television, we can test these things. We're going to put it to the test right now. See, we're back, and we're standing up this time. We're with Michael Foley, his new book, Drinking with St. Nick, Christmas Cocktails for Sinners and Saints. And we're one of the two. We're not going to tell you which. Now we get to, this is great. This is why we had you in, because we get to drink on the job. Be jealous. Be very jealous. What is the first cocktail that we're going to be trying?
Today, Derek, we are making Adonai's Smoking Rosemary Old Fashioned.
It's a very long, complicated name. And
it
I like
is.
The fact that you use fire in it.
Absolutely.
Especially inside with sprinklers.
Well, it's in honor of Adonai who appears in the burning bush. And so that's why we've got the smoking rosemary to honor God's appearance in the burning bush to Moses on Mount Sinai.
But the burning bush wasn't a rosemary bush. Is there a tie-in with Christmas and rosemary?
Rosemary has
a book about Santa.
That's true. There's a long tie-in between Christmas and rosemary because of legends. There is a legend that when the Holy Family was fleeing into Egypt, the Mother of God washed baby Jesus' clothes and put them on a rosemary bush to dry, which dried very quickly because of the way a rosemary bush looks. Mm. And to reward the rosemary bush, God named it Rosemary, Mary's Rose, and gave it a fragrant aroma. So and rosemary.
I enjoy that aroma on potatoes and chicken and everything I possibly can.
It's good stuff.
So tell us the ingredients we have here for anybody who's going to be playing this on YouTube and going, you know what, I'm going to try this thing. Go step by step, please.
Okay, so we start with making a standard old-fashioned, which involves simple syrup, bitters, bourbon, or rye. We're going to use a little more simple syrup for this particular one. Usually you use only about a teaspoon, but we're going to make a tablespoon.
The crew is very happy because they get to drink on the job with permission this time. They do it all the time, but now they don't have to hide it, so that's nice.
And then we are going to use 2 ounces. This is a white rye, a Redemption rye whiskey. We chose Redemption rye in honor of the Redeemer, so we're trying to keep the Christmas theme
going.
Lord
knows we could use a little ourselves, so I sent the team out to buy. Here's a list of ingredients. Get it. So I think a little bit in their subconscious, Guillaume. You're the one who bought it.
Couple dashes of bitters.
You hear bitters used in a lot of things, but seeing what you used it for, I've never used bitters at home. You don't use a lot of it.
You don't.
That bottle will last for the next 300 years.
Yeah, I've never actually seen bitters in so large a bottle before, but this is a lifetime commitment that you're making right here.
What
so
does bitters do to a drink?
Well, it adds a little bit of bitterness.
Myself up for that.
But you want that.
Smack me, guys.
So it adds a little complexity to the drink, but it's not overbearing.
Okay. Yeah. So you would notice this, the 3-4 drops you put in there.
Absolutely.
You would it would change it significantly or just a little?
It would change it enough so that it's not just a sweet drink, but a sweet drink with a more well-balanced taste.
Okay. So what do we got next? We've got the whiskey.
Exactly.
Syrup and the bitters in there.
That's it. So we're just going to stir these around a bit. We're going to add our ice.
Yeah, the only thing we don't have is an ice bucket because nobody sits their alcohol around in this office long enough to need ice.
Garnish with cherry. Now, so far, this
That's
is just
an old-fashioned.
Fashioned. That's exactly right.
Can I try
right.
a sip of
yeah,
this
Yeah, please
first?
Do.
That's pretty good.
All right.
Because I want to know, because this is where it gets really cool. You're about to set rosemary on fire. When I saw this recipe, I didn't read the instructions. I just saw that you needed to set rosemary on fire. I thought maybe you set it on fire and then put it in there. But you're infusing the drink.
Exactly. So this is very cool. It has a nice visual presentation. But the idea is the smoke from a burning rosemary sprig is going to infuse the whiskey so that it will have a smoky flavor.
Do you need me to hold that to be ready to?
No, I can show you. One person can do it.
Right,
so the first thing we do is set our sprig on fire.
Home right. toast. We toasted this ourselves. And then we didn't.
You get a shaker and then you extinguish the flame by holding the shaker over. And now we count to 10. One,
get down
two,
in there.
Look
at it.
3.
You can see the
4,
smoke in there. And that flavor goes in.
Yes. Now watch the cool smoky look as we take it off.
It's nice. But that impacts the flavor, you say?
It's going to totally impact the flavor. So now we're going to do this for our second drink.
I mean, I guess I used to smoke. And now when I walk past people who smoke, you can smell it significantly. And I was never aware of it when I smoked. I wonder if that amount of difference is noticeable here. This is fascinating. There's things like this that always make me wonder, who thought of this? And how?
That's
who discovered
so true.
This? And what didn't work? How many different things did they try and work?
Right.
Like, you know what? I figured it out. We got this. Okay, so while it's still smoking, or do you let it clear?
You can let it. It doesn't matter. But I think we're good.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Let's see. That is really good. And it's different. Yeah. It's different than it was. Richie, you're a resident alcoholic here. Come in here and try this, because you've had old fashions
not
in the past.
No.
This is Richie McGinnis. He's one of the video producers here. Try a sip of that. You don't have a microphone, so what do you say?
It's delicious.
You're terrible. Kylie, come in here. She is working PR, working with Michael. Please try it. Get it right in there.
Oh my
gosh, that is actually really good.
That's so after watching the steps, smooth. Don't run away here because you're much more interesting than Richie.
Okay, great.
Watching the steps and trying this, is this something you'd make at home?
I think so, definitely, yeah. I mean, I just have to get the ingredients, but there wasn't really many ingredients.
Let go of it. Let go of it. It's mine.
Okay.
So what is this called again?
Adonai's Smoking Rosemary Old Fashioned.
And you have, the recipe is in the book. Make sure you pick up a copy of the book, because this is, especially Christmas time, people are coming over. You can impress your friends and set stuff on fire at home. How awesome is that? We have one more drink to try. We're going to drink this while we cut away and switch the ingredients, and we'll be right back with that one. And we're back drinking with St. Nick. Michael Foley, drink number two. And there, how many recipes are in the book?
Oh, good question. I should know the answer to that. It's
ballpark it. Nobody's going to count and sue.
I know it's well over 100.
Oh, excellent.
And that's not including the beer and wine suggestions that we also make.
Perfect. So we're going to show you two. We've already shown you one, the Burning Rosemary. This one is what?
This one's called the Turtle Dove Martini. One of the special sections of the book is that it not only has drinks for the 12 days of Christmas on the calendar between December 25th and January 6th, but it also has drinks for each of the verses of the carol, the 12 days of Christmas. So for the turtle doves...
There's a drink for everything.
There is indeed.
Festive. Eat, drink, and be merry. So what do we need for this one?
For this one, we
need... The turtle dove martini.
We need...
We have our Drinking with the Saints martini glasses ready to go.
Exactly. So we've got amaretto, frangelico, a vanilla vodka, the only flavored vodka I approve of, and whole milk, and then nutmeg.
Frangelico is not something that's commonly used. What is frangelico?
Frangelico is a great
liqueur. It's dressed like a monk.
It's dressed like a monk.
I thought it was Mrs. Butterworth at first, but she doesn't wear a rope belt.
The rope cincture is the giveaway. This is a monastic belt. Because Frangelico was an Italian hermit who apparently invented this herbal liqueur. He grabbed things around his hermitage and made a liqueur out of it.
But you have a lot of time on your hands, and there's no television.
Exactly.
You can come up with amazing, amazing things, and thank God that those people did. Okay, so how do we go about making the turtle dove martini?
Okay, so you normally need 2 ounces of vanilla vodka, but I'm going to be pouring 4 because there are two of us.
There's a lot more of us. Everybody except for the person who's underage is excited about this.
And 2 ounces of Frangelico.
And you mix it together right there.
Yeah. So we're going to mix it all first and then shake it. And 1 ounce of amaretto. So I'm doubling that for us. And then 1.5 ounces.
Now, milk is where you get me confused. Milk, and this is... I just remembered Ron Burgundy drinking the milk. Milk was a bad choice. But it's a more common ingredient than most people, I think, realize in a lot of drinks.
It's true. And it's what gives the turtle dove martini its turtle dove appearance.
The doviness.
It actually does kind of look like a turtle dove by the time we're done.
Throw it in a shaker over ice.
Yep.
And then you shake this for about 40 seconds?
I shake it 40 times.
40 times.
Yeah, because that's a good biblical number of penance.
Is there a secret to shaking? And is there really a difference between shaken and stirred?
There is a difference between shaken and stirred. There are some drinks that you definitely want to shake and others you definitely want to stir.
Can you give an example of each?
Yes. You definitely want to shake anything that has an opaque liquid ingredient, like milk or lemon juice, because you need to really shake it to break up those flavors and make them do their thing. But the reason why you're not supposed to shake something like a martini, with all due respect to James Bond, is that when you shake gin is very sensitive. And when you shake it...
I catch mine crying a lot.
Exactly. And when you shake gin, it gets bruised. And like many insecure people, when it's bruised, it grows bitter. So there is actually a bitter flavor to a shaken martini that doesn't exist with a stirred martini.
Try that at home. Try them both ways. I think it'd be very interesting.
I was very skeptical of this to begin with.
It sounds weird.
It sounds weird.
That a liquid would taste different because you shook it.
And frankly, it sounded a little foofy, a little too sort of purist.
Right.
But we did a taste test at home, and it was a remarkable difference. So now I'm pro-stirred, whereas before I was not.
Okay, so we've got it in the shaker.
This one you shake.
With the milk. Exactly. Give us 40 quick shakes.
All right.
You get a close-up on that, Gail.
He's actually counting. I should start counting, see if I can throw him off. But I wasn't counting to know if I threw him off or not. All right, so you got 40 quick shakes. That chills everything. It mixes it together.
Exactly.
It diffuses the milk.
And it's ready to go.
It carbonates it and causes it to explode.
Exactly. Here we
are. You pour it into a martini. Martini glass, why do martinis have their own glasses? These things, I've drank far too many martinis in my life, and these glasses just seem designed to spill.
That's true, but barware always has a purpose. And thank you. And the purpose of the martini glass is to keep the heat of your hand away from the drink.
Because the martini warm is terrible.
It's a strained drink, so the ice has been removed because you don't want it to water it down further, but you want it to stay cold.
What's the proper way to hold a martini glass? Not like this.
No. So like a brandy snifter, you would hold like that because you want your hand to warm up the brandy. But with a martini glass, you want to keep it as far away, keep your hand as far away from the...
Like a delicate wine.
Exactly. Now, one last step. We got to add the nutmeg. This is actually what gives it a turtle dove appearance, because a turtle dove is a speckled dove.
You getting a shot of that, Guillaume?
Oh, yeah.
All right. It's a beautiful looking drink.
Well, thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And this is the turtle dove martini. That's really good. And you poured a lot of different liquors in there.
That's right.
And it doesn't, your first sip of a martini is really usually one of the, there's none of that here. Is that the milk?
It's called a turtle dove martini, but of course it's not a true martini. It's a dessert drink.
You put vodka in there. Normally, you put a lot of vodka in there, actually, and everything else you put in there, with the exception of the milk, is liquor. It has alcohol in it, but there's no burn with that. Is that the milk doing that?
It's the milk, and the Frangelico is very sweet, and the Amaretto is sweet as well. So this is a great dessert drink.
I like this a lot. Kylie, come on and put your first drink down. Everybody's getting drunk on set today, ladies and gentlemen. Try that. The thing is, the glass is ready to be spilled. It's like daring you to spill it.
That's really good. That's really...
Yeah.
It's very much like a dessert.
It's very smooth.
Creamy, yeah.
Now, Richard, resident Daily Caller alcoholic, come on in here and try this thing and then speak into my lapel.
I'm not an alcoholic. I just like alcohol.
Okay,
right?
That's the first sign of an alcoholic is not admitting it, but that's okay. You chug down half of it. You're not an alcoholic.
It tastes so good when it touches my lips.
Well, you just go away. I knew it would be a mistake to bring anybody who works here in on this. This is absolutely delicious. This one I will make at home. I appreciate you coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, you've been kind enough to sign two copies of Drinking with St. Nick for us that you can enter and win next week by emailing Derek at dailycaller.com. You're going to draw for the winner of this week's books, which are Major Garrett signed books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you to draw that for a second, but where can people learn more about your recipes, your life, and your brand? And I'm going to keep drinking this.
Please
you can't have this one.
All right. So the book is available, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, both Drinking with St. Nick and Drinking with the Saints. And we have Drinking with the Saints merchandise on the drinkingwiththesaints.com website.
Yeah, you got the convenient measuring drink.
Measuring glass. We got
all
the martini glasses. We got the aprons. All of those are available.
Everything you need, drinkingwiththesaints.com. Check that out. I appreciate you coming in. Now let's wipe this off a little bit. See, this is what happens when you drink during breaks as well, as you spill things. Plus, the milk kind of exploded. But damn, that was a good martini.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you just to pick two.
All right.
At random, so there's nobody cheating.
Okay.
And read the names aloud. First winner,
David Thaman.
David Thaman, congratulations. Now a second winner.
Right.
That makes everybody else a loser, by the way, just so you know.
Brigitte Bradley.
Brigitte Bradley, congratulations. You just both won signed copies of Major Garrett's book. You'll be getting an email from me. It'll probably end up in your spam later on today. The book's Drinking with St. Nick. You can enter to win Drinking with St. Nick, signed copy by Michael, by emailing Derek at dailycaller.com. Go to drinkingwiththesaints.com. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Derek.
Making everybody's Christmas a little bit brighter and making our day a little bit drunker.
Excellent.
So don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and the videos and all that stuff wherever it is. We'll be back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.